Hi, my name is Mark. I'm the Prepper Guy, and this is a Prepper Guy podcast. In a world that's always changing and full of fear and confusion, and especially when it comes to prepping, I am a minimalist, and I like to be ready for anything that life may throw at us, whether it's bad, the end of the world, or just a flat tire on a deserted road. All right, this is episode number 4, and today I'm going to talk a little bit about something I saw on Facebook. I know, yeah, I talked about Facebook in number 3, but I was looking at a picture on my timeline, and it said, when did freeloaders become more important than taxpayers? Well, that's a good question, and it probably needs to be analyzed because someone asked the question, and it's in a lot of our minds. We wonder why these people coming into our country are given all these opportunities where we're the taxpayer, and we feel like we're not getting any of that stuff. So how did the taxpayer become the loser in this game? Well, let's take a trip in the Wayback Machine and find some answers. Back in 1933, FDR gave America the New Deal. And with that came some sweeping changes in social programs. These changes are what put the Democrat Party on top of the world. Look at me, Ma. Top of the world. As that movie. It's an old black and white one. So it really put them in power for quite a while. In fact, the New Deal was a series of domestic programs enacted by the United States. And it went on from 1933 until 1938. And then even more came online after that. The New Deal produced like a political realignment in the parties. And it really put the Democrat Party right up front and center. And they remained in control of the White House since back then. I mean, from 1933 to 1969. So those changes obviously had resonance with the people at that time because they kept electing them and going, oh, this is great. And so this may sound all well and good, and we all want, you know, people to do better in life. So this all may sound good and well, but who gets to pick up the tab? That would be the taxpayer. The taxpayer picks up the tab and has to pay the ramifications for all these social changes, as we call them. And so we, me and you, are the taxpayer. So how did they pull this off? Well, probably wasn't a big grand scheme at the time. We were in the middle of a Great Depression. And a lot of these things seem to make sense. It's just like if someone's helping you work on your car and they'll go, oh, check this, or did you do that, or we should. And because you're in a situation where you really need to get this running, you try any idea that comes along the pike. And sometimes they're not real well thought out. Like maybe, I don't know, back in the day when I was younger, you know, a lot of the manual transmissions and the sleazy car dealers would literally put, I think, like banana peels in some of the gearboxes to make it run a little smoother and not seemed so bad. I guess all that fiber kind of gummed it all up and it didn't seem like it was a piece of garbage when it really was. So that's kind of what ended up happening, is they like, ooh, let's do this, let's do that. And they had the philosophy, kind of like in today's world, is like, well, if we give people jobs and we do all this stuff and we make work and then we pay them for that work, then that will boost the economy. Well, that's, you know, true, if a lot of people are working and they're paying taxes and they have money coming in and they're deriving that money from doing something besides living off the tax fund, because that was already collected once, so it's not really growing. You're just replenishing bits and pieces of it as you go along. So, you know, everyone working is good because then they go out and buy dinner and they do all this stuff, and it just kind of filters through, kind of like when you wake up and your arm is asleep, you start rubbing it to get some blood going through it. That's kind of what they were trying to do. And you know what? And maybe in the short term, that might have been good because you do need a booster shot once in a while. But these programs were ingrained into government. And so then, therefore, they didn't go away. So it's kind of like, you know, you get an insulin shot or something. But instead of just giving you the shot to get things going, they just keep intravenously feeding it to you, and eventually you would die from, oh, I don't know, let's say you had a surge of energy because, you know, what do they call that? Adrenaline. Well, that's good for a moment. You get some adrenaline going and you're like, whoa, I can really, you know, because you're freaking out and you're panicking and you get your adrenaline going. But if that was constantly flowing through your body, you're not even allowed to crash from that. So you probably end up dead. So how they pulled this all off was through basically marketing, is how I look at it. Now, that's probably not the political term they use, you know, marketing. But see, the government doesn't produce a product. They're just out there for whatever reason. So look at it like Google or Yahoo or Microsoft or Apple. They create products which are called programs. So basically they say, we need to do this. We need a big social program, so we're going to start Social Security. We're going to pull in money from the people, and then we'll set it aside, which they never did. And that goes into the general fund, and that then becomes a big pile of money, just like when Microsoft started selling Windows and DOS, and Apple started selling iPads. It becomes this giant pile of money, and then like any good business, they're going to do more research, hire more people, improve their products. But this is money with Microsoft or Apple that consumers have put in there voluntarily by buying those products. So the company uses that money to better the products in the future. The government just takes all your money from you. So you're not given the chance to opt in or opt out. You're just in. So to get this past the voter, they have to market it. They have to go, this is going to be great. This will be a safety net. And back in Social Security days, people probably just thought, well, I don't need that because I've planned for my future, or I have a farm and it's paid for and I will live out my days there working and eating the food I produce. But it sounded good because somebody told them, well, you know, there's a lot of people out there that work day and night and they don't have any money for retirement. So when they get 65, 75, 85, whatever they keep raising the limit to, we'll have some money there for them and we'll give it to them to keep alive and buy their food. Well, that would be great if you were putting that money into an IRA or a KEOL. But no, the government takes it and it goes into the general fund. So FDR was smart enough to do just like Obama did with healthcare. He told the people it was insurance. The government has no legal right to force you to buy insurance. So when it went to the Supreme Court, they argued in the Supreme Court, no, this is a tax. And the Supreme Court said, well, it's a tax, then you can do it. And nobody ever looked at the dichotomy of this argument. So on one hand, they're saying, look, Joe, Jane, American, this is going to be great. It's going to be Social Security insurance. And when you retire, you'll have this fund here. And we're forcing you to buy into it. But it's really a good thing. So don't worry about it. And then they turned around and told the Supreme Court, who was not smart enough to look at the marketing on the other side, and go, this is a tax. Supreme Court says you have every right to tax, so why are we here? And then it became law. This is what happened with Obamacare. You know, everyone thinks it's insurance, but it's really a tax. Everyone thinks Social Security is insurance, but it's a tax. The tax money goes into the general fund, and when they give it back to you, it is literally an entitlement. You didn't pay into it like you would pay into your retirement fund at work. You were taxed that money, and the federal government can do with it as it sees fit. So that was their marketing on that. Now, if you look around and all the other things they do, whether it's illegal immigration or gay marriage or legalized marijuana, whatever they start doing as a federal government, they have to sell it to you and to me. And that is their marketing. Their marketing is a little bit more ruthless and they don't fall under the Federal Trade Commission. So they can lie and cheat, and they use the news to spin things. So if you're against a program, maybe to help the poor, which most of them seem to be, you know, these project housings and welfare and WIC and lunch programs and all this stuff, if you're against it because you look at it and you go, you know, it's probably great, but I just don't want to buy it, then their marketing kicks in and says, well, you're a child hater. You don't like this group of people. You hate feeding poor children. And how are they going to get an education if they go to school and they haven't eaten breakfast? So we need this breakfast program. So all of this becomes part of their marketing, and the media buys into it. And literally they're buying into it for free. It's not like they're getting paid. Like if you were running a marketing campaign for Apple, Apple would have to spend millions of dollars in advertising to get the TV, the eyes on the TV or the radio to look at that and go, well, that's a great iPad. I need that. They don't have to do that. All they have to do is create this little shitstorm. And then all of a sudden the media goes, look at all of these people on this side of the aisle. that hate poor people. And then the media does what the media does and stirs it all up and throws it back in our face and continues to go. And then someone reacts to it. And then that becomes a story. And then someone reacts to the reaction and that becomes a sub-story. And it gets what they call legs. And then all of a sudden, it's moving on its own. And the government's not trying to sell you on it, even though they have already, you know, they're selling you on it because you have to buy into it to okay it. Now, once you buy into it, you're pretty well stuck with it. It becomes law and a tax, and out of your wallet it comes. So it's not like if you go to Apple and you go, I saw this awesome TV commercial about the new iPad and I got to have one. Can you show it to me? And he's like, yeah, it does this and it does that. And it's really cool here. And look what this and it'll do that and that and that. And you're like, wow, this does everything I want. I'll buy it. See, you're given that choice to buy it. The government comes along and they sell it in a way to where they get a majority of the whiny-ass people to say, we should buy it and we don't care about all them people because we're a minority and you're disparaging us. And then everyone just kind of capitulates and another argument comes up and another program comes along. And we lose track. And then all of a sudden, this other one becomes law. And now you don't get to walk into the store and go, wow, that's kind of cool. I want to help those people. I'll buy it. No, you don't have to buy it. It's already being paid for by you. You didn't even know you owned it. So this is their marketing approach. And that's kind of oversimplified because they do a lot cooler things than that to screw us. But that's what they do. And then all of a sudden, you're trying to figure out, where'd all my money go? Now, how taxes work, and this is how to answer the question, when did the freeloader become more important than the taxpayer? As a taxpayer, a lot of these programs are means tested. So if you're a true taxpayer and you're working and you're making money from other sources other than, you know, an allowance from the government, because that's not making money, that's just moving money. How does this, you know, affect you because of these means tests? Well, you walk into the food stamp office and you go, I'm down on my luck. My industry fell apart. McDonald's put these robots in. So now I don't even get minimum wage because everything's done by computers and I don't have a job. They go, well, how much money did you make last year? Oh, well, last year was a great year. I had a job. McDonald's hadn't put these new automated systems in. So I was a manager at McDonald's and I was making decent money and I was supporting my family. Oh, well, you made too much money last year. So we can't help you this year. In these means tested programs, kind of makes sense because you don't want to be giving money to people, but they don't really analyze what the program's for. The program is to help people right now who need it. Well, right now you need it. You didn't need it last year, but your ability to receive it is based on last year. And that's what they call means testing. And it makes sense, but it's totally unfair because it doesn't make sense. If you're getting $2,000 a month from the federal government or the state government or the city government to pay rent or whatever, it's based on an income level. So the minute you reach that lower standard, they take the program away. Well, if you need $3,000 a month to live and the government is subsidizing, say, $1,000 of that, and then all of a sudden you start making $100 more than their bottom limit, say like $1,000 a month, they take it all away. Well, now you're stuck with $1,000 a month. They don't sit there and go, well, when you get up to this level, then we'll just stop giving it to you. Once you get to making $3,000 a month, then you don't need our money. Once you get to $2,000 a month, maybe you only need this much of our money because we're just filling in the blank from what you're making to what you desperately need. They don't do that. They just cut it off. So these programs have been marketed in a way to where really they don't spend a whole lot of the money that they acquire from the program. So what do they do with all that extra money? Oh, well, that's the beauty of it. See, this is their marketing and why this is how I consider their products. Let's say you come up with this great program. I mean, the best way to become rich is to come up with a crisis and then build a better mousetrap. Well, the government says, well, we got these problems. Let's tax the hell out of everybody. And then we'll have this big pile of money, just like, you know, Microsoft has. And then we'll dole out this product. You know, but there's some administration costs and collection costs and marketing costs, whatever they call that. So of the $1 million we have, we're only going to spend 25% of that on the program that it was designed to be for. The other 75% goes into the administration costs. which is normal in business, but it's they don't have a bottom line to worry about. They don't have break-even points. The government just sits there and goes, well, great, now we have this all this extra money. I'll hire my friend's cousin's monkey's uncle that I really like to administer this department, and I'll hire my wife's sister to manage that department, and we'll get all our friends, and this senator over here needs a little bit of money, so we're going to funnel some of that off to build a bridge to nowhere, but we're going to call it helping, you know, people that are oppressed get from this side of the river to that side of the river so they can work. So that's how the money gets spent. And so it really is kind of like a big frat club party budget for what's left. So if there's 75% of that money laying around, or 50%, whatever it is, they can just blow that. And if you sit there and go, why'd you buy that? They'll come up with some lame reason why they needed that, just like I would come up with a lame reason why I need a new Ford Raptor four-wheel drive truck. I don't really need it. But if I can market it in a way to where my wife, the controller of the family when it comes to money, because I will just spend it worse than a politician, if I can get her convinced that since we're going to upgrade already, and since we do these other things, we'll look at it this way. Well, that's their marketing and government comes into play the same way. They go, well, yeah, it may seem stupid that we built this bridge to nowhere, but that's because you don't know what you're talking about. See, these people that live over here need that bridge, and it's our duty to build roads. And so we're going to build this bridge to nowhere so these people can get to work. Nobody ever asked, do they even need to go across the bridge to work? Because they've been living there for 70, 80 years, and everything's fine, and they never asked for it. But they will word it in a way to where you and I will look at that and go, oh, okay. Yes, they do have the right to build roads. Well, that's a different budget. But see, they use semantics and they mix it all up. So you and I sit there and go, oh, well, yeah, they do have that right. Well, I have the right to go to work. Do I have the right to buy a new Ford Raptor? No, but if I can word it right, my wife will sit there and go, yeah, well, geez, babe, you know, yeah, I did say you could, you know, pick the truck and, you know, we're going to buy it, but not today, and you're using a false premise to get me to say, let's do this. No, see, no one does that in politics because our lens that looks at Washington is the media. If a media is doing their job, then we can sit there and see what they're doing. But the media doesn't do that because there's so many, I don't know what the hell they are. You know, they're just in the camp for this guy or that gal or this party or that party. And so they just go, oh, okay, you know, we'll just report it this way. Now, there is some coercion that goes on in there because there's the FCC that can tell people, you know, if you're not toeing the line here, we'll just take your license or we'll make it real hard for you to buy that other company or to merge this one, which would normally be none of their damn business. But we've allowed all these things to become their business. And so much of what makes America work is now their business that they can control so many things. So that's kind of how that all works. So I'm going to take a break here for a second, and I'll be right back. Thank you.
Preppers should always be prepared, and the Prepper Guy can help you find the supplies you need without having to get lost in a big box store or on a website designed to sell you everything else. Our online store offers a focused shopping experience, making it easy to zoom in to find what you need. Because we affiliate with Amazon to deliver our goods around the world, you'll always find the best values too. Find what you need at doomsdaydepot.com. Remember, that's Doomsday with a Z, where you can zoom in to find what you need and learn more at prepperguy.com too.
Well, I just needed to play that new commercial for you for my other business. So what I need to do is gather my thoughts a little bit. I can't explain all of it any more than probably anyone else can. What I try to do is give you a way of looking at it that might help you understand it. If we look at what the government does as a business and the programs are their product, in the media and the BS they tell us is their marketing campaign, then the only way we're going to fix this is to maybe start paying attention to the commercials. So that's, you know, really all we can do. And the commercials are what we watch on the news and the things that go on. So it's not like when Microsoft or Apple or Yahoo or Google comes out with a product and they have to show you and convince you, and it's run through their marketing campaign and all the benefits are laid out, and you can literally look at it and go, I personally like this Apple product, so I will buy it. We're not given that option. There's no option A, B, and C. There's like, we have this program, we're going to shove it down your throat. If you're not paying attention at the end of this telemarketing call, so to speak, there's not going to be an operator come on and verify that this is what you want to buy. We're going to convince you that this is the right thing to do for this group of people or for this reason or that reason. And then we're going to make you feel really stupid if you don't want to buy into it through the media calling you names. And we're going to continue to push and push. And then if there's a lot of pushback, we'll back off for a while. But in another year or two, we're just going to continue to shove this down your throat. And that's why you have to always be vigilant, because they will back off of something for a while. If the people aren't really into this idea, you know, everyone will call their congressmen and their senators and leave nasty messages. And so it will get to a point to where they'll pull back. They might pull back for a year or two. It's an old Soviet expression, two steps forward, one step backwards, two steps forward, one step backwards. So eventually you're still making progress because you're always moving ahead one step. You took two and then you backed up. So I think Glenn Beck talked about this a lot when he was on TV, and he called it the Overton window, which he didn't coin that phrase, I don't think. But it's like you're looking out your bedroom window and all you see is what's right in front of you. And so the government says, let's move over here a little bit. Take a look at that. And you're like, oh my God, that's awful. That is horrible. I don't want that. So then they move it over a little bit to where you're comfortable again. And they go, how about that? And they go, oh, that's a lot better. I mean, if I had to look at that other thing, I would go crazy. You're not given the option to go back to the original view. So they go, okay, we're going to take $100 out of your checking account. No, I can't live that way. And they go, well, we're going to. There's nothing you can do about it. And you go, but I don't want you taking nothing out. And then they present it in a way they go, you know what? You got a point. What if we take $25 out? Oh, I can live with that. And then they take 25 out. And then next month they take another 25 out. And you're like, well, that's not so bad. What happened to your first point of view where they were taking nothing out? Oh, that became over there. You don't remember that anymore. So that's what they do with these programs. They will back off a little bit and you'll forget. And then they might introduce some other hideous idea. And you'll go, oh, God, no, that's just awful. I'd rather have blood shoot out of my eyes than do that. Well, how about this? Oh, well, that don't look so bad. Last year, I was flipping out about it, but now that don't look so bad. If my option is this or that, I'll take this. You're never given the option of things remaining the same, which they've made into a bad word, you know, the status quo. Originally, the Constitution was set up so there was division and there was no getting along, and people argued all the time and there were debates about everything. And the politicians, if you think way back then, they weren't in Washington every day. They would come up with something and then they'd talk about it and then they'd send them a letter and then they would get on their horse and ride for 2 days to Washington and then they would have a meeting. And the meeting might be 3 months down the road. So it was set up to where Washington was very slow to act. And that was a safety, like a governor, to keep things kind of moving slowly. Now they're there all the time. We have the internet, instant access. And so they can continue to shove shit down our throat so rapidly that we don't even have time to choke. It wasn't set up that way. And so when people go, well, there's division in the White House and the Senate and these people don't get along and they're a do-nothing Congress, it's like that's the way it was really set up to be, because a lot of times really bad ideas need some time to simmer. And then you look at it and go, wow, that's a really bad idea. Good thing we didn't do it 6 months ago and shove it down everyone's throat. That's what happened with Prohibition. It was just a bad idea based on bad principles, and then they did it. Years later, they looked at it after lots of jury nullification and stuff where juries were just ignoring it and saying, no, Your Honor, we're not going to find this guy guilty, even though he had a still in his living room. And the judge couldn't do nothing about it. So eventually that slowed, and then they went, this was a stupid idea, and then they did away with that. It's, you know, still on the books as an amendment, because we don't erase things in the Constitution. We just make them void and move on. So that's how it was supposed to be. So you got to always have your eye on the ball now because things happen so fast. And when things slow down, they make it seem like a bad thing. Meanwhile, we're busy working and just trying to pay attention a few hours a day listening to the news. And you just, you can't get enough. So you as my listener anyway, and how I look at things is I try to encompass it all and go, okay, there's an easier way for me to look at this. And you know how I need to look at this? Is it's a product and they're trying to sell it to me. And once the American people buy it, there's no refund. There's no 90-day guarantee. There's no 100% money-back guarantee. Once it's bought, it's in. You got it. That's it. It's like, buy your car wisely because you will never get another one. And you can't take this one back, ever. So if you look at it that way, you might have your radar on a little bit better and you might look at some things. And in spite of how good it sounds and how wonderful it sounds, just like my Ford Raptor, it's not something that I'm going to need to buy. It's something I really, really, really want. And marketing has made it look really, really, really cool, but I can't afford it. And so I don't really need it. A lot of these programs, like let's talk about the Board of Education. Sounds really great. We need a Board of Education. The Board of Education has never educated anyone, but they pass all these programs and they push things down our throats and that becomes the way it is. So we need to, you know, kind of stop that silly nonsense and say, well, this is a great program, but I just don't see it working out in the long run. You know, I think schools and education should be on a local level. So I can tell my people at the BTA or whatever it is, no, we're not going to do that. So you have to be vigilant and you have to look at it and go, yeah, that's really great. I don't want one. You know, no different than your kid coming to you and going, we really should go to Six Flags because it would be awesome and wonderful. And you're like, you know, that would really be awesome and wonderful. We need a family vacation and all these marketing things that your kids will throw at you and your wife will even sit there and go, well, that'd be kind of cute. You're being marketed to do something that's going to cost you money. And if that's not something you can do right now, then you have to overcome that and go, we can't. You know, you don't want to be the horrible dad that denied them Mickey Mouse, but you need to be able to sit there and go, we can't do this. Maybe next year. In fact, next year, why don't we set up a budget and then we'll go this direction or that direction and we'll have the money. So I can't tell you how to do it other than the only way we can slow the roll is we need to stop buying their products. I mean, we're the consumer. We are the people. We're the ones that pay all this through taxes. When you think the government has money, you're wrong. They have our money. And they continue to have money because we continue to give it to them. So it's like an auto renewal on a crappy product you bought on the internet. And now every month they take money out of your check or your credit card. And you're like, gee, I wish I could stop buying this thing I don't even use. No, you can't. So we need to stop buying them and we need to stop listening to the marketing. And once we've made a decision, we need to stick to it and be steadfast. No different than if I'm trying to sell you some product that you like, but you just don't want it. It's too, the price point's too high. The cost is too great. Then no matter what I say, no matter how great it sounds, no matter how awesome it is, this isn't something you need. So don't buy it. And we need to look at it that way. And we need to tell our friends that don't vote for this because this will cost your grandkids money. It's not going to solve the problem. It sounds good, but it's not the pixie dust they're telling you it is, and it won't make all the scary things go away. And that's our duty to, you know, word of mouth advertising, I guess it would be, you know, to stop this stuff. So that's, you know, pretty much kind of how this all became about, is how did, you know, the taxpayer become less than the freeloader? Well, we allowed it to happen. We allowed the government to sell us products we didn't want. And this went back, you know, way back, like I said, to the New Deal and FDR, and it was even happening before that. And it's all these social programs and the way they're means tested. And you as a taxpayer, you have a job, so you don't need these programs, and therefore you don't qualify for them. You're paying for them. And yes, you are paying for them. And if you believe in them, then quit complaining that you can't use them because, you know, I have a really good friend that's just a flaming liberal. Known him since junior high. Love him to death. He'd do anything for me, and I'll do anything for him. He is diametrically opposed on the opposite end of the political spectrum as I am. We still get along. But I told him, I said, you know, the Republican Party and the Democrat Party is really the same as far as wanting to help people. It's just our approach on wanting to do it. And if the Democrat Party was actually following their approach and what they really believe, then most Democrats should have two jobs. Because if you really believe in a church, let's say, you're going to give more money to them. You're going to be happy to do that. And so every time you find an extra dollar on the ground, you go, oh, thank God, what a blessing, and you hand it to the pastor. Well, Democrats say they believe in all that, but it's like a big church potluck. Everyone's going to the potluck, but no one's bringing anything on the Democrat side. Now, there's a lot of them that really believe what they believe, and they think they're doing good, and that's great and awesome. But the majority of the base are just people that are at the potluck waiting for dinner to be served. So if you're a true Democrat and you really believe in these social programs and you think this is the way we should help poor people in this country, then by all means, get a second job, pay a higher tax rate, send your money to Washington for all these opt-in programs. Like when you fill out your taxes, you know, send another $100 because that's what you believe in. And me, being a Republican, I will stay on my side and try to avoid paying for these things. Doesn't mean I won't help my neighbor and donate to churches. It's just our philosophies are different. Unfortunately, the Democrat Party has a large base that it loves a potluck dinner. They just love it. They will show up for every potluck and cakewalk the church throws because they're not going to bring anything to the party. And they're just going to sit there and go, what's for dessert? That was great. You know what would be really great with these free cupcakes you gave me? Little pink umbrellas in my drinks. What would really be great is if these cheap plastic cups were made out of fine china. Well, bring some fine china. No one's stopping you. So that's what I tried to tell my friend. I go, I have no problem against different political parties. I hate them both. I would like to see a third, fourth, and fifth party. And everyone says you can't do that, but yes, you can. Study the Electoral College and how it works. How the founding George Washington was elected president through the Electoral College. So don't let people tell you that was a bunch of crap. That thing works. So if you had five or six parties, then it wouldn't be like the Super Bowl Party A and Party B. It would just be all these people. And if you garner enough of the electorate throughout the country, then you would win. You don't have to win by a majority because that's not how it was set up. So I'm not against my friend that's a Democrat. And when you study the Democrat platform and you study the Republican platform and you go back about 60, 70 years, they were real similar. In fact, most Democrats were more conservative leaning 80 years ago than the Republican Party is today. So you can't get caught up in that. Oh my God, he's a Democrat. Oh my God, he's a Republican. It doesn't work that way. It's just belief structure, and it's no different than saying he's a PC buyer, he's an Apple buyer. They're both products that do the same thing. There's just differences, and you can't sit there and go, I hate that guy because he owns an Apple. Well, I hate you because you got that PC. See how silly it is? So Washington is smart enough to know, Washington, D.C. is smart enough to know how to market their garbage. They're just like junk salesmen. Unfortunately, there is no fair trade laws. There's no, you can't sue them for bait and switch. Doesn't work that way. So you have to keep your eye on it and go, you know what they're really selling us is this stupid three-legged dog. I don't want that. Why would I want that? Now, if you have a three-legged dog, he's probably precious as hell. But what I'm saying is you have to look at what they're selling you and you have to really analyze it. No different than buying a new car or a computer or some kind of system that helps your business or something for your children or a treatment for medication for a loved one. You have to look at it and go, what does this do? How will it affect them? What are the trade-offs? Is there an alternative? And then you can come up with a fair buying decision. So I hope that kind of helps look at how this all happens. And, you know, I would love to blame this president or that guy or this guy. But the simple fact is, you know, the greatest generation came back after World War II, and they were just so happy to be alive, and they just went to work. And when these social programs came out and continued in existence after they got home from the war, they didn't look at it. They just went, oh, okay, I'm alive. I have a job. I have a family. And so it slowly just, you know, it's like that slow leak that eventually just floods your house. And so it goes back even past that. I mean, the ink wasn't dry on the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. Well, let's just go back to when it was ratified and it became America. The ink wasn't even dry, and people were trying to mess it up. Hamilton wanted banking, and he wanted debt, because debt gave Washington, D.C. power over the people, us, the debtors, or whatever they are. So it's been going on for a long time. The fact that it's lasted this long is just sheer amazing. I mean, it's like buying that car you didn't even think would run, and here it is 200 years later, still chugging along, change the oil once in a while, and it's still great. Not that any of those exist, you know, but that's what it's like. It was set up perfectly, and now the gears are getting worn and stuff, and it needs an overhaul, but it doesn't need a constitutional convention unless they're going to go and strip off all the junk sitting on top of it and go, you know what? This original document actually did everything we do today. It just had a lot less words. So it really works if you study it and how it functions. And this is off the point a little bit, and then I'll wrap it up. When I went to college back in, I think it was the late 70s, early 80s, I took a computer science class, which was really kind of funny. And we learned how to do punch cards. And the computer lab had terminals, which was really just like a glorified typewriter with a TV monitor on it. And all the work was done at the main CPU, the big control lab, the center for data processing. And that thing was a building. It was huge. Didn't do anything more than what a calculator today does, probably less. My teacher was telling me, even back then, he had worked for NORAD. And he said NORAD still uses the old computers that have vacuum tubes in them. That's how old those things were. He said the reason they use it is because there's no company yet that can provide the downtime guarantee that they can keep with that thing. So basically, when a vacuum tube burns out on that computer, there's old Bob that remembers it's this type of tube, and he runs down the hall and pulls it out and plugs it back in, and it's working. And so for what it needs to do, it still works. And they probably still use it to this day. They might have a lot of fancy high-tech upgrades for it as far as visuals and monitors and stuff. But the reality is, what's protecting us was an old, old, old computer with vacuum tubes in it. And yet for what it was designed to do, it was more reliable. That's how the Constitution is. What it was designed to do is like that old vacuum tube computer. It only had to do certain things. And if you followed the rules, it always worked. And then we've added all this other stuff on it. It's no different than, you know, I don't know, religion. God said, love me, love your neighbor. That's it. And then they added all this legalese that's created this problem that we have today. But the simple fact is, if you're living that way and you're loving him and you love your neighbor, well, if you love your neighbor, you're not going to steal from him. You're not going to sleep with his wife. You're not going to covet his stuff. If you love God, you're going to sit there and try to be a good person. You're not going to get into all the minutiae of what that means. You're just going to go, I'm a good person, and I don't treat people bad. Well, it's the same with the Constitution. It was given certain guidelines to follow. So we need to get back to that. So the taxpayer is the one paying for all this stuff. That's why we're at the bottom of the list. We're the one, you know, we're the accountant at the bottom of the room and the lower level writing all the checks. Meanwhile, they're all up on top living fat and happy, spending our money and giving it to their friends to run these programs. And these programs are just products that they sold to the American people that brings in millions and millions and billions and trillions of dollars. And then they use that to do whatever they want, hire their friends, buy jets, roads to nowhere, whatever it is. And all they really need to do is protect our damn borders, keep commerce regular. That was pretty much it. The states do the rest of it and build post roads, which I guess is a really antiquated old term, you know, so the post office and the Pony Express could get around. They did not build freeways, not build all this other stuff. So when you strip it down, it would still work. It would just work differently. It would work without income tax. It would just work differently, you know, like it did before the 1900s, before income tax. We still became the greatest nation on earth. Up to that point, we had the Industrial Revolution. People were making money. We were feared the world over for our military strength, even though we didn't have a standing army as like we do now. People knew you didn't screw with us. And Japan learned that the hard way. But we didn't have this massive tax program and all these programs to spend money. So it works. It just works differently. It works more simply. And when all things are considered, the simplest answer is usually the right one. So that's my thoughts on that. And that's what you get when somebody posts a stupid picture on Facebook asking a dopey question. I'm sorry about getting this podcast out a little late, even though this is only number 4. I've been trying to figure out when the best time to release them is, and I was going to do them on Tuesdays, and then I ordered a bunch of new equipment, because if you listen to number 3, you know, I was bitching and whining about my microphone and all that, which was just like a $15 plug-in stupid microphone. This one is a new Audio-Technica broadcast microphone. I don't know the number, and I don't have it written down from it. Oh, there it is. BPHS1. It's really sweet, and it's got the boom mic, and it's a dynamic mic, so it sounds better. And I got that in on Monday. I got it Friday, but I had some problems with some other equipment I ordered, so I had to return it. Amazon was great. Before I filled out the return thing, I already had an email saying, your new one's on the way. I got it in 2 days, which was 2-day shipping. So I love Amazon. This mic really kicks butt. So I did this podcast previously, and I had my settings all wrong, and it just sounded awful. So I'm redoing this today on Wednesday so I can do my editing and everything. And I'm thinking Thursdays are going to be good, because all the experts say Thursday is a good time to put your podcast out there. I don't see how any of that matters. If it's out there, someone will download it like you whenever you're ready to. But I want to get consistent on it, and I want to get some consistent timing on it. So I'm thinking Thursdays are what I'm going to shoot for. And then also the length. If any of you have any ideas, I know I ramble a lot, and that's probably why I'm a podcaster, because I like to hear myself talk. Because ask my wife. I mean, she just tunes me out and goes watches TV. So I guess, you know, all broadcasters are slightly narcissistic. But send me an email at Mark, M-A-R-K, at prepperguy.com. If you have any ideas or thoughts, criticisms, I don't care. But if you think maybe shorter podcasts, maybe 30-minute ones, because you're my audience, and if, you know, most podcasts I see are an hour long, and I can ramble for an hour pretty easily, but I could probably focus it down to 30 minutes and give you the same thing. But sometimes I like to color things in and, you know, stay within the lines and make a pretty picture. And it's hard to follow me, I know, because everyone that knows me just looks at me like, what are you talking about? I get into philosophy and I go real deep into a problem, and I don't just look at a leaf. I look at every vein on the leaf. So, and then trying to put that out there in words. And then, you know, because I'm a minimalist in my mind and prepping and all that, I try to go, how can I simplify this down to its purest form? And how can I tell people how I look at it? Because it really gives me a lot of comfort in having a bigger picture that's simplified to where I can look at it. And then I can sit there and go, yes, this affects me, but I can't fix that. Oh, look way over here. I can fix that. I can make an escape hatch over there. So I could shorten them down, you know, 20, 30 minutes, but I don't know if that matters. I'm going to try to get a little better at this. Like I said, I had some problems with the audio. I rewrote a lot of the post and tried to, you know, have a flow to it a little bit better. And this is a work in progress. So if you're listening to this one and you listen to my other ones, I can't thank you enough. And if you do have any information or things you would like to send me or tell me, just do it, mark@prepperguy.com. And that would be terrific. You can go there and look at the show notes at prepperguy.com. Just go down the side menu there to podcast, click on that. That has all of them, all four of them. Come Thursday, just click on number 4 and it'll take you to the page, and then you can read a way shorter version of this because I don't get into typing. That's why I'm going into podcasting a little bit more. So anyway, thank you so much. I hope the audio is a little better, and the more I learn to use this, if you got any expert advice on using dynamic mics and mixers, I've spent hours and hours on YouTube looking for my mixer and how to set up. A lot of unboxing. Well, I know how to unbox something. You just open the box and there it is. I don't know how to hook it up exactly right. So I've been playing with it a lot and recording a lot and then listening to it back and then, you know, telling myself, set this way. So if you got any ideas, shoot me a link. I totally appreciate it. So I'm going to wrap it up. I want to thank you all. And hope you stop by prepperguy.com and leave a comment or something like that. I'm on Facebook. I have a fan page and then my personal page, but you can attack me from any one of those. I don't care. Give me your advice and what you think. That would be totally awesome. So that's it for today. I hope you have a great day and enjoy the apocalypse.